Blog Talk Radio.
Real Sports Talk Radio on the air every Thursday, or every Tuesday night, sorry, at 9:30 p.m. on the Back Sports Page Radio Network. As always, it is I, Randy Zellia, the one, the only, joining you as your host, and the rotating wheel of co-hosts continue, as I like to welcome in the social media director of Back Sports Page, the one and only Miss Bar Rescue herself, Katie Hutchinson. Katie, good evening. How are you today?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's been a long day, but you know, we're rocking and rolling as always. Behind the glass tonight is the host of Beyond the Benches, which can be heard every Sunday at 9 a.m. to get your football fix going. Ryan Stern, he's producing the show tonight. And of course tonight, Penn State fans, Jay Paterno is going to be with us live, answering some questions, talking about his new book, The Paterno Legacy, Enduring Lessons from the Life and Death of My Father. We're definitely going to talk about all of that. First, let's pay some bills, let everybody know where they can find us. Go to backsportspage.com. The show is produced by backsportspage.com. You can find us on Facebook, Backsportspage on Facebook, Real Sports Talk Radio on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm at Randy BSB. Katie, you are on Twitter with the address being...
at KT underscore Hutch.
Awesome. Awesome. And, of course, at Back Sports Page on Twitter. So there's a lot of stuff, little moving parts, before we get into the Jay Paterno interview and before we start talking about this. We have to bring this up because of, we had this little conversation before we started, and I find it very interesting on how confident of a Ravens fan Katie is. Katie hasn't been on the show that much. I think the last time we were on together was the Bar Rescue show. So
yeah.
So we have to bring this up. You told me before you were very, very confident that the Ravens were going to win this game. You have to tell me why.
Because I know my team, and they're a better team than the New Orleans Saints. Sorry, it is what it is.
Okay, you're going to learn this more and more as you become a sports media person. You're going to be like, you'll be able to say, okay, you know what, it just may not be our week, but you know what, I love the fact that you're still, you know, you call them your team. So that's the thing I still like most right there. So that's awesome. Okay, so let's give a quick backstory on how this is, how we got here. This always seems to happen when you're on the show. It happens when Nicole co-hosts with me, too. But let's explain how we got here. And I was talking with a couple different people, who are very big Penn State people, and they brought up the fact that Jay had written a book, and I spoke to the people over there at the Triumph Book Company there, and they sent us a couple of copies of the book. I sent Katie a copy. I said, Katie, how would you like to interview Jay? And then off and running. Without giving too much away from what you've read so far, what do you think of the book so far?
I think the book... was just a great book for everyone who wants to read about Joe Paterno. It's for the person that is a huge fan. It's the person who went to Penn State, but it's also for the people who just want to know about the scandal. So the book addresses it right away, cuts the BS, but it really gives you a lot of cool backstory about Joe Paterno as a person. So I really think that any kind of sports fan would really appreciate this book.
What I find interesting too is how candid he is, and how open he is about talking about what happened. Now, let's just do a quick review, with our opinions too. After getting the facts from what I had seen from different reports and so on and so forth, I'm going to say this to Jay on the air, and I'm not afraid to say it. I honestly think that it was a little bit of a disgrace part of the NCAA to penalize the team that's currently there because of past actions and also take away wins from players that had nothing to do with the situation.
Oh, absolutely.
I wanted to get your take on that.
So, I mean, the hard part about this is that this is, you know, it is a scandal involving the coach and, you know, but at the end of the day, it's not like it's a scandal involving performance-enhancing drugs. It's not something that, you know, should take away from those wins. So the fact that they're trying to act like they didn't win those 111 games, that's rough. I mean, I don't care what happened off the field. I just think that they shouldn't be taking away from the team in that way.
It was very unfair, and it's also unfair to the student body. I know they had a rally cry. It brought a lot of people together. Of course, you know, obviously the real people you feel for here are the victims of the whole situation with this monster that was Jerry Sandusky, who is now in jail pretty much for the rest of his life. He'll never see the light of day again, which I think is fair. And I think it's very fair. You know, I think what we have to put in perspective are the victims here. The one thing that I will bring up with Jay also is because of his father's untimely death, we never really got his side of the story. And,
absolutely.
I think that's
why he wrote the book. Honestly, I think that there was a lot of things that he felt were left unsaid, and he needed to tell his dad's side.
Yeah, I think that's 100% accurate of exactly what you just said. One thing too, I have friends who are alumni from Penn State, and you can't find prouder alumni than people who went to Penn State. They'll never say a negative thing about the school. They absolutely love it. It's their bread and butter. It's, you know, that's their resume thing right there. You know, we are Penn State, and I'm sure you know a few people who went there. And there, you can't find a better fan base in college football. Maybe Notre Dame, but I think Penn State is up there in the top five fan bases of college football.
No, I totally agree, and I think that's also part of the reason why this, you know, received so much media attention right off the bat before the facts were even, you know, received. I think that it's because of their name. People wanted to talk about it. People wanted to hear about it.
And something that you just said just sparked a question, which I'm going to save for Jay. I don't want to talk about it right now. I think, I'm sorry for just being so coy about that. But, you know, I think it's, you know, what we just talked about in this day and age of media, it brings up quite a few questions that have to be asked. Real quick, some other quick little headlines here before we, you know, dive deep into this, because this, you know, once we have Jay on, we're going to have him on. We're going to be talking Penn State, and we're going to talk about his life, his father's life, his, you know, his family on how they reacted. So we're going to be talking about that. But some other quick sports news, Katie. Were there any major surprises in your mind during the NFL weekend that you got to see?
Not too much. I mean, unfortunately, the only thing that sticks out in my mind is that there's a couple referee calls that are being brought into question from a couple games, not just mine. The other thing, of course, you have to watch the highlight reel of the Oakland Raiders handshake that ended up, you know, getting them the flag. So that's always a fun one. But, definitely some referee calls this week that were a little off. But I think all of the games this week, a lot of them were really close, a couple blowouts. But overall, I thought it was a good week.
My highlight of the week actually came from a loss. Now, I'm going to put my fan hat on for a few minutes and just when I bring this up, and Ryan can join me on this if he would like to, the Odell Beckham catch against the Cowboys. I've never seen a catch like that before in my life, and it takes a lot for me to get out of my seat and just go, holy expletive right there, but that did it. And it was probably one of the most amazing catches next to the Tyree catch. And the Tyree catch, people can say it was lucky. This was pure skill. And if people don't say that's one of the best catches of all time, they're out of their minds.
I will jump in real quick with the Odell Beckham catch. And it's funny because literally it was just a few minutes prior to the catch, they were showing him during warmups, and he practices this. This is something that he looks to get better at, to make these kind of catches. And for those of you who are good with YouTube, check out some of his LSU highlights. There's one play where he's the kickoff returner, and the ball is literally about to go out the back of the end zone. It's going end over end, so it's not even a spiral. And he just reaches out with one hand and snags it as if someone's tossing him a wiffle ball. It was literally, as you said, one of those moments that you'll always remember. And the thing, as a Giants fan, I didn't even see it live because right before it happened, I got an alert that the Rangers had scored. So I switched over to the Ranger game, and then I'm getting text messages and calls. Did you see that? So, and I also have to give credit to Michaels and Collinsworth. That was a great call for that play.
I agree. I can't disagree or argue with you on that. And Katie, the only other thing that caught my eye, and you being a social media guru, because you are a social media guru, do you find it interesting? I sometimes will put on Twitter while I'm watching a game on how there are a lot of beat writers and newspaper people that will actually give you the play-by-play on Twitter.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so funny. And I was on Twitter while some of the 4 o'clock games, or the 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock games were on. And for the first time, I'm not going to give out the writer's name, but it was the first time I saw a beat writer use an expletive while describing a referee's call.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So I saw that, and I was like, there's got to be some sort of repercussion about this. 20 minutes later, I saw a retweet from that newspaper and from that writer apologizing for using that word. If you think that social media, Twitter and Facebook are not censored, especially in sports, think again.
It depends on who you are. You can't necessarily say that. Me, I can use them. I can tweet away during the game and drop an F-bomb, but I don't have to apologize.
Yeah. For the fact that I think it was not even a newspaper, I think it might have been one of the social media people for the team. Now that I'm thinking about it, it was one of the social media members from the team. So as a social media guru, we're just going to say that's a frowned upon situation.
Absolutely. It is hard, I'll say this much, when you are in control of multiple accounts. Occasionally, you will forget which one you are logged into. But as long as you catch it in that split second and delete it, you should be okay. But unfortunately, this person must not have realized it.
Right. Well, it's almost a situation like that show, The Newsroom, I always tell you about. One of the girls who worked on social media on the show did a tweet at 2 o'clock in the morning. She woke up at 2:30 in the morning because it happened on the network's account and deleted it because it was a very bad tweet. But once it's out there, once you press enter, it's there. Doesn't matter if it's up there for 30 seconds. Once you press it's out there. Someone sees it after 30 seconds. So
absolutely.
Definitely want to hear from you for Jay Paterno. I know that's an awful segue on my part. You're listening to Real Sports Talk Radio, courtesy of BackSportsPage.com. Follow us on Twitter at BackSportsPage. If you want to send over your questions to ask a question to Jay Paterno, use the hashtag BSPPaterno. BSPPaterno. So that's Katie will be looking at Twitter. I'll be checking Twitter during the interview. If you have questions for Jay Paterno, tweet us over. And of course, you can always, if you missed the first part of the show or you have to get off and not listen to the whole entire show, you can listen to any of our shows at BackSportsPage.com, Blog Talk Radio, or Katie, I don't know if you knew this, just like your bar rescue episode, we're on iTunes.
Oh, awesome.
Yes. So you can tell all your friends and family you're on iTunes.
Yeah, I can't wait to call mom.
Yeah, not only that, but here's even more motivation. You can go tell your friends and family now and get them an iTunes gift card just for that purpose. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. All right, so with that being said, that's, again, yet another awful segue by me, and I really apologize for it. We're going to welcome in, our special guest, Jay Paterno. Jay, thank you very much for giving us a few minutes tonight of your time. The first question I have for you, you know, because of the new book, The Paterno Legacy, Enduring Lessons from the Life and Death of My Father, how has the book tour been for you so far, and how has it been receptive?
Good. I mean, it's been a lot of signings, a lot of media stuff, but I think, now that we're 3 years since my dad's been gone, I think people are ready to hear the whole truth and really have some perspective and look at the whole sweep of his life again. And from that part of it, it's been really good. And we're into our fourth printing now. So, and it's only been out since, end of August. So it's going really, really well.
Well, that's great to hear. Can you talk about the process? First off, what made you decide you wanted to write the book? I know you said you want to tell your father's side, but why at this point in time was it important to now get his side out?
Well, I actually wanted to have it out sooner, but, my agent in New York thought, look, let's make sure we get this right. I really thought I would have it out around Father's Day. I really thought I'd have it last fall, and then we thought Father's Day this past June. But, as my agent said, let's make sure you get it right because you only get one shot at this. So that's why I came out this fall. But I think it timed out well because it gives people enough time. It's been 3 years, and I think that's been important to kind of let this story play out.
What was the most challenging part about writing this book?
Well, I think the most important thing was the most challenging thing is what you take out. I think the book ended up being about 130,000 words. My first draft came in about 160,000 words. And there's stuff that you have in the book that you really love, but you got to start to prioritize and you got to make sure it makes sense to keep it. Does it advance the narrative of what you're trying to get accomplished? How relevant is it? And the other thing is you don't want to repeat. It's a fine line because a lot of Penn Staters know a lot of these new, they know a lot of stories about my dad, but you can't assume that everybody's going to read the book as a Penn Stater. So you have to make sure that you tell the things that really reflect the kind of person he was and that are relevant to everyone that's reading the book. So that was the biggest challenge, is to make sure to understand that this book's going to be read by a lot wider audience than just people that already know Joe's story.
Okay, great. I honestly love that you started the book with chapter one being called The Elephant in the Room. And that you just got right to the point immediately. But we actually have somebody on Twitter who wanted to know how you decided on the layout of the book, like how you decided in which order you are going to present the chapters that you did.
Well, I think the thing I really wanted to do is I wanted to get that chapter up front right away because I know that that's the most timely thing. And for a lot of people, they were going to get the book and wanted to know that. And I thought what it would do is get that aspect of Joe's life story out of the way, knock it out, correct the narrative, false narratives that have been put out there, so that then people could then say, okay, now I have my head around it, I can put that aside, and now I can really appreciate the lessons and the 84 years and 10 months of his life that he lived prior to the last 2 months where this happened. I wanted people to be able to put that aside, knock it out, and be done with it, and not have that hanging over him saying, well, yeah, this is a great story about Joe, but when do we get to the part about the last 3 months of his life and how his career ended? So I wanted to get that out right in front. And as far as the layout of the book, really, it's really laid out in the sections. There's kind of my personal stories. It starts out, obviously, with the chapter of the elephant in the room, but the first couple chapters are about what it was like growing up with him, what he was like as a grandfather, what he was like as a coach, and then it got in, and what he was like as a boss, that kind of stuff. So kind of my personal stories. Then I got into really six or seven days or 8 days when the scandal broke, and then really telling that from the inside. But then I didn't want to end on that, and I talked about a lot of really, really good memories that I had coaching and recruiting and all those kind of things, and then came back to really the last couple months of his life. So I laid it out kind of in sections like that.
Okay. No, great. I mean, why you laid it out the way it did, it worked out perfectly. I personally was somebody who, not necessarily a Penn State fan, I didn't attend the school, but I really wanted to read the book regarding, you know, the incident and to find out more. So it definitely got me right away. But I also like that you had the forewords before it that kind of gave other people's insight. So my other question is, I'm wondering what you want people, you know, what you want people to remember your dad for the most?
Well, I think the most important thing that people realize about this, about the book is, and get out of the book, is that this was a guy who obviously coached football, but it did not define him. It was, you know, the games he won are what mattered the least to him. This was a guy who was an educator. This was a guy who made huge impacts on a lot of people's lives in a lot of different realms, and really left the world a much better place than he found it. And it just so, you know, football just happened to be, you know, Michelangelo was a sculptor, and certain people were politicians or whatever. Football happened to be the medium that Joe used to create the masterpieces of his life, and the masterpieces of his life are the lives he impacted and the people whose lives he made better and the young people he reached and educated. And obviously a lot of things he did as a philanthropist, as a father, as a grandfather. I mean, those are the real masterpieces of his life. Football just happened to be the way he created them.
Hey, Jay, was it difficult when you were writing the book, writing some of these stories after your dad passed, putting that on paper with the emotion you know, of someone who loses their father? Did you find any difficulty with that?
Yeah, I mean, there were times I'd be in my den writing and my wife would come down and I'd be laughing out loud. And she'd say, "What, are you okay?" I said, "Yeah, I just remembered a really funny story. I'm writing it." Or, and then, you know, the next day she'd come in and I'd be, you know, very emotional, and she could tell maybe I'd been crying, and she'd say, "You know, what's going on?" I said, "Well, I'm writing about this particular part." So yeah, it was emotional, but you know, I think it was very, very good for me, whether I had actually written the book and published it or not. It was good to have those moments really alone with my dad after he was gone, so to speak, because you know, when he died, it was very public. And when he died, you know, my dad died, and within 10 minutes we were in a room across the hall, my brothers and I and some other people, figuring out how we get our mom out of the hospital before without the media seeing her. We didn't want to announce that he had died because there was already media outside. And we wanted my mom to be able to get out of back door and get home before it was announced. And then they're worried about, you know, how do we move him out of here without, I mean, it sounds morbid as can be, but, you know, the last thing you want is some nurse taking a selfie, you know, with, you know, dead, you don't want a picture of your father's dead body to end up on the internet. And your kids and your kids are going to have to, you don't want that out there for them. So there were all these things you had to worry about. And then it was a very public morning. You know, there were 50,000 people came through the viewing, you know, 12,000 people at the memorial service. You know, so I never really had a chance to really sit down and deal with it. And writing the book really gave me that time to do it. So in that regard, it was really, really a positive thing for me.
Can you talk about also, in your own words, now in a retrospect of the book, growing up being Joe Paterno's son, and understanding before all of this, you know, this whirlwind came around, what it was like having, you know, your dad being that larger-than-life person. Can you talk about growing up in that sense?
Well, you know, it's one of those things when you're living through it, you really don't kind of grasp it because you're too young to understand it. You don't understand that yet. You know, there are things we got to do that my friends never got to do. And you kind of got that, but you also didn't realize that, you know, when my friends went to an amusement park with their dad, nobody bugged them. You know, and their dad could get on a roller coaster with them without people stopping them for photos. So there's things it's like anything else in life. You get some things, there are things you get, and for everything you get, there's something you lose. But you don't really grasp that. But as I got older, and particularly when I came back to coach, you really understood why he did, you know, yeah, we lost some of those things, but, you know, and there was times that he wasn't high school football games, or he wasn't at, you know, I think he did one thing in scouting with my brother Dave, my older brother. He went on one camping trip for Boy Scouts, I think it was, and that was the first and last camping trip he went on with anybody, because that just wasn't his thing. He grew up in Brooklyn. The great outdoors weren't exactly what, you know, his thing, but, you know, it has pluses and negatives. It's just the way it was, and, you know, you just didn't realize that, you didn't realize necessarily that when you were living through it, but you do now.
Oh, definitely. So, well, yeah, I mean, the book is written by you, which is, you know, what you said, the person who knew him the best. We actually had an awesome question from someone on Twitter that I would totally love to know as well. The person wants to know, Jacob Gillett wants to know, what was harder, playing for or working with Joe?
That's a good question. Physically, it was harder playing for him because – something I found out pretty quickly when I got in the team, you know, my dad was a pretty tough coach, and there were a lot of guys in that team would have loved to have tackled him. And they couldn't tackle him, but, you know, his son was the next best thing. So I took a lot of really, really tough shots. And you know, I, for whatever reason, I mistakenly thought I might get some sympathy out of it. But, you know, the first day I was actually in pads in practice at Penn State, I got drilled. And back then, you know, nobody knew it, did anything about concussions. You know, I got up, pulled the clump of grass out of my face mask, and, you know, I had been out for about 8 seconds, got up and finished practice the next day. Nobody knew about concussions back then, but I'd get drilled in practice, and I'd get up, and I'd look at him, and he would literally be laughing. You know, just, hey, yeah, this is good for you, so toughen you up. So from that standpoint, it was tougher. But coaching for him, from a mental standpoint, was tougher because – look, I wasn't under any delusions. The bar was going to be a lot higher for me because people were going to say, oh, you're only there because he's your dad and the whole nine yards. And anybody that thinks that my dad would have just given me a job just to give me one doesn't know my dad. You know, he asked more of me than he did the other coaches. And I understood that because, you know, as he'd say, look, it's not enough to be fair. You have to appear to be fair. So he'd bend over backwards, and I understood that. So that part of it was tough.
Right. So let's see. What else do we have? So one of our Twitter followers, Jay Feaster, at The Real Jay Feaster, wanted to know about how your wife and kids are doing now that it's been 3 years since your dad passed.
Very well. You know, it was, you know, from my oldest kids are twins. I have a boy and girl twins. And when this all started, they were just entering middle school, which is tough enough in and of itself without, you know, all of a sudden there being hundreds of media people gathered in front of your grandfather's house and people knocking on our door at my house, you know, media people coming to the house. And all of a sudden, you know, your grandfather, who was somebody you idolized, is being vilified for really not for reporting a crime. I mean, that was his whole role in this entire saga, was that he received a report of something and reported it. But still, you know, he was part of this whole media storm. So it was tough for them. But, you know, they've come around and they've adjusted and they understand it now. And they've read the book, and I think that was really helpful for them. So everybody's doing very, very well. And my wife's doing very well. Although, unfortunately for her, she's still married to me. But, you know, she's a very loyal person and really has been a rock through this for me. So it's been everybody's doing very well.
Right now you're listening to Real Sports Talk Radio with our special guest, Jay Paterno, Randy Zelia, along with Katie Hutchinson here. Talking today about the Paterno legacy and enduring lessons from the life and death of my father. Jay, I have an interesting question here for you. What was your reaction to when the news broke about the scandal a couple years back, 3 years ago? What was your initial reaction? I think a lot of people would love to know just that. What were you feeling at that time when you heard all of this?
You know, just it was so bizarre, and it was just shock. I mean, it was one of those things. I had known Jerry Sandusky my entire life. You know, I worked with him for 5 or 6 years in the staff from 95 through 99, just 5 seasons. It's just incomprehensible to believe that any of that could, you know, at the time, you just couldn't believe it was true. You didn't want to believe it was true, but, you know, obviously he was charged. And you know, it was just, and every day it just got stranger and stranger, and you it was surreal because, you know, you see these media stories and these things, stories that break in the media circus and those swarms of media that descend on a town or a city in one of these stories, and you see it on TV, but until you're actually in it, nothing can prepare you for it. Nothing. It doesn't matter how, you know, obviously being part of Penn State football and having a father that he coached as long as I had, I've been around a lot of media. But when something like that descends on your town and the story takes on larger than sports and larger than life proportions, every day was just, you'd wake up and say, what could possibly happen today? It can't get any more bizarre. And it would. You know, friends of mine, you know, a couple guys are close to you, we should joke about, you know, we're in the white Bronco. I mean, this story just continues to go on. And, you know, my friend jokes and says, well, the white Bronco's got solar panels because it never runs out of gas. This story just continues to go and go and go and go. So it's just something that being in it, you could not comprehend the path it was going to take. And while, you know, at the same time, you're trying to coach football and trying to be a father and trying to do all these other things. So it was a challenge, to say the least.
So you mentioned, obviously, you mentioned that you know Jerry Sandusky and that you knew him for several years and worked with him. My question is, what kind of relationship did you have with his son, Matthew?
Well, I knew him. He was actually one of the managers in our football team, the student manager when we were in college. And, you know, that's one of the things that's so hard for people to understand. They're saying, well, how come you guys didn't know? Well, here's a guy like Matt that, you know, Jerry was in court and the state of Pennsylvania, you know, allowed him to adopt him over the wish, you know, put him in Jerry's home over the wishes of his mother. But Matt wanted to live with him and wanted to be in his home. And then, you know, when Matt, I believe Matt was 18 when he finally got adopted. But, you know, all we knew was that, you know, people say you didn't know. Well, here's a guy like Matt Sandusky. All we knew was that he wanted to be adopted by Jerry. So why would he even suspect anything? You know, when it came, you know, when Matt came out with the allegations that he was abused by Jerry, I mean, we were all shocked because all we knew is that, you know, here was a guy that was fighting to be adopted by Jerry. And, you know, I don't know the psychology of sexual abuse and what it does, you know, necessarily what it does to victims, things like that. So, you know, but we know more about it now than we did then, obviously. But, you know, Matt is, you know, we've known him, I knew him pretty well. Not, I wasn't very close to him or anything like that, but we knew him pretty well.
Yeah, I read that part in your book, how you had talked about, the adoption through the courts and if a court found him, you know, to be a suitable parent, then why would any of you think any different? My question, though, and you kind of touched on this, is knowing what you know now, looking back at all of your time with both of them together and apart, is there anything that stands out in your mind as something that, you know, maybe you should have noticed?
You know, I have asked myself that question hundreds of times. And, you know, there's not one thing that I can look back and say, God, that would have tipped me off or all if I'd been more aware. Because, you know, we weren't around Jerry that much with kids, you know, because when you're coaching football, you know, one of the things about our program was it was very much a business atmosphere. So, like, my kids were never in practice. When I was a kid growing up, we didn't go to practice. It was very much, hey, this is a professional situation. Kids aren't around. You're here to, you know, this is only the players are here, only the coaches are here. And because that's, you know, one of the things my dad didn't want is he didn't want people's kids around because he didn't think it was fair to the players. So, you know, we weren't around Jerry with kids very much. And the other thing about Jerry's, you know, not only did he adopt six kids, but he had foster kids placed in his home over and over and over again. So, you know, there was nothing really that tipped us off, that would have tipped us off even knowing what I know now. Now, that said, you know, but, you know, 5 years ago, if you told me what a nice guy offender was, I didn't know what that was. I mean, I would have said, you know, a predator would be a guy in a white van with a trench coat and, you know, probably cruising parking lots of elementary schools or playgrounds looking for kids. But we now know that those people are, you know, there are a lot of people that are nice guy offenders that are coaching you soccer, they're involved in scouting, they're, there are people all around in every community in America. So, you know, obviously I know more about now, and I still don't know if there's something that would have triggered it. I don't know.
Right.
So, Jay, I have to ask this question, too. Looking back now from when it started to, you know, when it sort of got to the end of it, and the NCAA came in here and sort of made some sanctions on you guys, do you think the NCAA sanctions were fair to Penn State, and do you think it was fair to the players, both present at that time and past, that the ruling affected?
No, I think, and as the lawsuits are going forward against the NCAA, we're seeing more and more that this was a complete setup by the NCAA, that from the earliest days before they had any information, they were hell-bent on, they didn't want any negative publicity, and they were going to sanction Penn State. The Free Report, which was commissioned by the Penn State Board of Trustees, was promoted as an independent report. And now, through emails and things that have been gotten in discovery, we now know that the Big Ten, the NCAA, Louis Free, and even Penn State's Board of Trustees were all working together from the earliest days of it. In fact, the NCAA was supplying questions they wanted asked. The NCAA was supplying lists of witnesses they wanted. That information was being passed to the NCAA. Information was being passed to the Attorney General's office in the state of Pennsylvania. So it was not an independent investigation. And it looks more and more like there was a predetermined outcome that they wanted, even from the first month or so of the investigation. And that's, you know, so they really, it was a setup all the way to sanction Penn State. And I had the sense of that. I was questioned by the Free Committee in December of 2011, like within the first week or so. And I told my dad after that, I said, the questions I got had very little to do with Jerry Sandusky. A lot of it was about Joe's power at Penn State and could he be controlled and those kind of questions. And I said to my dad, they're gonna allege lack of institutional control and they're gonna sanction Penn State. I can tell by the way the questions are being asked. And that was in December of 11, and that was a good 7 months, 8 months before that they did sanction. So I had a sense it was coming, and I had a sense it was a setup, and it turns out I was right, unfortunately, and absolutely not fair. And I think you're gonna see the NCAA as these lawsuits go forward. That's going to come to light even more so.
What is your role now with Penn State?
I don't work for them at all. You know, I'm obviously with the book and some other things, but, you know, every time somebody wants to do an interview about this whole situation and they're looking for somebody to defend Penn State, ironically, I'm the guy that's out there. I was on Outside the Lines at ESPN about a week and a half ago. And, you know, nobody from Penn State would come on and defend the university. So I'm on there, and I'm defending Penn State, and I'm talking about what the truth was and the narratives as they relate to Penn State. So I'm actually carrying a lot of water for them. I also continue to stay engaged. Alumni groups, I've done 4 dozen events with alumni groups and philanthropic events to raise money for Penn State scholarships and things like that. So I've stayed very engaged, not in an official capacity, but, you know, the alums have had me around and I've done a lot of things because, you know, I can separate the fact that some people, the administration of Penn State made decisions that hurt the university and obviously hurt our football program and hurt my father. I can separate those people from the university I love. I'll never turn my back on Penn State.
Did it bother you that they took your father's statue down?
You know, it didn't bother me at first, you know, because I was kind of the mindset, you know, it's a statue, who cares, you know. But, you know, after going to a lot of alumni events and doing the book tour, I mean, all the book signings, we do Q questions and answers, and I get asked about that all the time. And what I started to realize is there are a lot of other people that want the statue back because it is a, you know, I would hear, you know, our family photo was taken there. We have a photo with my grandfather before he died at that. We have a family photo there. Our Christmas card photo was there. I had one woman said, you know, my husband asked me to marry me there. And I said, well, I'm not sure if you married the right guy. I don't know if that's where I would ask my wife to marry me. But you know, it's a place people have a lot of memories about. And so it was a very real, tangible place. So, yeah, I would, you know, obviously like to see it go back up. And now thinking about it that way for a lot of other people, yeah, I understand why they want it back. And, you know, that'll come. And, you know, that'll happen in time. But, you know, it's not, we're more focused on really getting the story right and getting the truth out more so than we are the statue right now.
In your book, in the foreword, you also had a couple pages from Phil Knight, the Nike co-founder, who was also talking about taking down the name. And he said how relieved he was when he saw you and you said that that's what your dad would have said to do. Is that kind of the same way that you feel about the statue?
No, I think it's a little different. Phil Knight was under a lot of pressure because, you know, it's a publicly traded company. He's got stockholders. I think the statue was taken down because some people in the university administration kind of manufactured some outrage about the statue still being there. So I think it was totally different situations. But when the statue comes back, it comes back. You know, that's fine. At one time I had said, you know, if it doesn't go back where it was, you could put it at the NCAA offices, but switch the finger from the index finger to another finger, if you know what I'm getting at. And my dad would probably kill me for even making a joke about that because that's not the way he was. But, you know, in two different situations. I think whether the name will come back on Nike's campus or not, I don't know. But I think the statue will definitely come back at some point.
As far as why you wrote the book and, you know, there's a couple, you know, legal trials going on right now. There's a lot of people forming websites to defend your dad. Between all of that, is really what you're hoping for is for someone to, you know, read up on everything, get all of the facts, you know, get backstories about your dad so that somebody will say, wow, you know, I was wrong for condemning him. You know, I didn't know everything. Is that really at the end of the day what you want from everything?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's some people you're never going to get back. There's some people that have made up their mind and there's nothing you can say to them or do to them or convince them of it. But those are people probably didn't think Joe was anything special before that, before all this happened. So you're never going to get them back. But there are a lot more people now that have emailed me and written and, wow, I didn't know this. And when they look at all the story, all the whole story, and they read all the facts that relate to my dad, they start to understand, you know what, I was wrong about his role in this. I was wrong about, you know, he was what we thought he was all along. And he was the real deal. And yeah, that you'd like people to come to that conclusion after it's all said and done, because that's the truth. And, you know, it's you hate to see somebody put as much time and effort into his life and living it the right way. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, spent 45, 46 years in public eye, never had a DUI, never was, you know, accused of a crime, you know, wasn't run around on his wife, you know, this is a guy that lived a very, very pristine life. And, you know, at the end of the day, as it relates to the end of his life, you know, he didn't commit a crime. He didn't even witness a crime. He was given allegations and reported it. And if we're going to vilify people for that, then, you know, then I think there's something wrong with our society. But it's coming around. I mean, it's just going to take a little time, but there's more and more people, you know, guys like Bob Costas have come back around on it. There's more and more media people starting to come around on it. And I think that's coming. And it takes some time. It takes perspective. I found it interesting last night when the prosecutor in Missouri started out his press conference by trying to point out all the inaccurate stories that had come out on social media that made it difficult for him to, you know, to really, he had to explain that those stories were not accurate before he delivered the verdict. You know, that's the world we live in, where those stories can be formed very, very quickly and with a lot of damage.
You know, Jay, you bring up you sort of just stole my thunder for a second there, because I was about to ask you, when everything was going on and news was breaking, were you surprised on how inaccurate some of the information that was coming through? Because a lot of it was, everyone was trying to break the news through Twitter and social media. Are you surprised on how social media played such a big role on a negative part of this whole entire situation?
Probably not, but I think this was really the first big sports story like this of the social media age. And I think we all learned lessons about, you know, if something gets repeated often enough, it takes on the aura of truth. And I think the surprising thing for everybody was, you know, people get their news from Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, there's no accountability in those situations. So these stories really took on, you know, the inaccuracies took on a life of their own and were accepted as fact. You know, it's, you know, and it's not just this story. It's so many other stories that are like this, whether it's Benghazi or whether it's, you know, Ferguson, Missouri or whatever it is. You know, people get on there and they want to be, you know, the for-profit media model that we have now. It's more lucrative than right. And that's what's changed. And, you know, there's no accountability with people on Twitter saying, oh, I'm here and I heard this. So, yeah, we were surprised a little bit by it. We knew what social media could do, but I don't think anybody really grasped it until this story really got out of control like it did.
And I also have a personal question for you in this standpoint. Were you upset in a way that your dad didn't really have the opportunity to tell his side of the story?
Oh, yeah, no question. I mean, that Tuesday when the story broke on a Friday, and that Tuesday he had his weekly press conference before we played Nebraska that year, and he was all set to go have a press conference and basically read a statement and answer some questions and clear up any misperceptions that were out there. And unfortunately, you know, one of the trustees pulled the plug on the press conference. And so when that happened, it just took on the whole story exploded, because obviously then the rumor started that something was going on and that, you know, he was going to get fired that day, which he didn't. He didn't get fired till next night. But, you know, it created a firestorm. They just poured gas on the fire rather than letting Joe get out in front of it and say, look, here's the deal. You know, what people realize is this story broke on a Friday afternoon. Nobody from Penn State went in front of a camera to discuss this or address anything until Wednesday night. And when they did, they fired my dad and they fired the president of the university, which they thought would appease the media. And all the media said was, well, gee, there's got to be a lot more here. And they stuck around and they continued to dig, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
How did your mom handle all this?
Well, you know, my mom was, you know, it was tough for my mom to watch this all unfold, because obviously she knows what kind of man that she's married to and that she'd been married to for almost 50 years at the time. And she knew the truth about what was going on. And it's tough to hear people write things and say things and assert things that you know aren't true. And some of them, you know, when you sit there and accuse somebody of enabling or covering up or turning a blind eye, you know, a knowing blind eye to child sexual abuse, that's pretty tough to swallow when you know it's not true. It's one of the most heinous things you can really accuse somebody of. And she knew it was absolutely not true. So it was frustrating for her to have to hear that. So, but she's a tough woman, and she's got great resilience, and she's gone through it, and she's handled it, and she's doing very, very well.
So my question, and this is a personal question. I mean, when all of this broke, and you all kind of found out together, but was there ever a moment in private where you looked at your dad, or even you looked at other staff members and looked at them and said, did you know? Like, did you know? You know, was there that moment where people looked at each other, like, kind of, you know, questioning whether anybody had any idea?
Certainly. I mean, that, you do that soul searching all the time. And, you know, when this story broke, I mean, you know, the guys that had coached with Jerry that were still on the staff, and there were a pretty good number of us, and it was actually some guys in the staff that had played on the Penn State team with him that had known him for 50 years or so. Yeah, we all said, gee, did you have any idea? And nobody, you know, we were all shocked.
Right.
So, yeah, we all asked each other about it.
And then also, of course, your dad is famously quoted for saying, I wish, you know, I had done more, which a lot of people took as an admission of guilt. But in the book, you're saying was really just what it was, that he was saying, I wish I had known more so that I could have done more. But in private, you know, in between the scandal and when your dad unfortunately passed, was there ever a time when he shared anything with you about, you know, regrets or things he wished he had done differently besides just not seeing it?
No, I mean, he basically said, Jay, look, I just had no, you know, we were walking, you know, even after he was diagnosed with cancer, we would walk every day. And he said to me, you know, Jay, he goes, I just had no idea. And he said, I wish I had. I mean, obviously, you know, he felt like maybe his, you know, if he had been more educated on the issue, maybe he would have been able to see something. I said, Dad, you couldn't have. You weren't around him with kids. You know, there's kind of this idea that Jerry was in our football building all the time with young kids taking showers all the time, and that so many of these crimes occurred in our building. And that's a false narrative. I mean, it just didn't happen. It, you know, the thing that Jerry was convicted of and accused of overwhelmingly had nothing to do with Penn State, did not occur on our campus, and certainly not occur in our building. So we never saw him around. After he retired, he just was not around our program. So we didn't see it. But my dad said to me at one point, he said, you know, Jay, I'm just unaware of these kind of things. He said, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn in the 1930s, and if something like this would have happened back then, you know, whoever the guy was that did it, probably some neighborhood guys would have taken him and beaten him up to within an inch of his life, and it never would have happened again. But we certainly didn't talk about this stuff in the 1930s and 40s in Brooklyn, New York, growing up, you know. And he said, not just in Brooklyn, but anywhere. You know, that's kind of what he expressed to me. And I said, Dad, look, I'm half your age, and I missed it, and I'm not aware of these things, and I got kids of my own. Obviously, I have a different take on it and a different perspective when I talk to my kids now about it, but I didn't then.
Right. All right, and I have one last question. While I was doing my Googling the last couple of days, getting ready for this, I saw a website, framingpaterno.com. Is that something that you're behind, or do you know who's behind it?
I mean, there's a guy named John Ziegler. I think that's the one that he runs. But, you know, he's taken that up upon himself, and he's defending my dad and the whole nine yards. So it's not something we're involved with actively. But yeah, I mean, there's another one. There's another blog by a guy named Ray Blihar who's defending Penn State. So there's a lot of people that have seen this, and they see some of the injustices that have occurred here, and the media creating this kind of scandal and really putting this on to blame where it really doesn't belong. You know, it's nice that people have that kind of interest in my father and getting the truth out. So, you know, from that standpoint, it's obviously something that you're aware of.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the website, I thought that must, you know, feel good for you that there are other people that are as dedicated or almost as dedicated to defending him, and just, you know, they're putting a lot of information out there hoping that people will read it and come to their own conclusions. So it must be
a good feeling. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that's really been great is so many Penn Staters and non-Penn Staters that have come out and just been very, very supportive. And, you know, and I think we're getting to a point in society where people are tired of seeing these stories get reported inaccurately and getting blown out of proportion and people being blamed for things and then the narrative never being corrected. I mean, I go back to the 96 Olympics with Richard Jewell, who moved people out of the way before the bomb went off in Atlanta in Centennial Park. And then Louis Freeh was head of the FBI under a lot of pressure to come up with a suspect, and they turned the narrative on him, and he all of a sudden he became public enemy number one. And then when lo and behold it turned out that he in fact was a hero and had moved people out of the way, you know, that story was kind of lost. And, you know, I think people get tired of seeing this story play over and over again. And I think this can be a very, very big learning experience for a lot of people if we get this right.
Absolutely.
Jay, I have to ask, what is the fondest memory that you have of your father?
Oh, I mean, it'd be tough to narrow it down to one. Obviously, being a kid and being around him, you know, just the moments we had alone as, you know, obviously as a kid, as a coach, you know, we would walk home from home games and we'd have, sometimes we just have great talks on the way home. It was just he and I, and that was something I'll always remember. And then, you know, with my kids, you know, when I had my wife and I had our first kids, we had twins. That moment when I saw him come in the hospital and sit down and hold my kids. I mean, that's something that any parent, when they see their own, if they're fortunate enough to have their parents alive when their kids are born, that's something you never forget. And, you know, both my mom and dad that night coming to the hospital and holding the twins. And, but, you know, there's a lot of things, but it's hard to narrow it down to just one or two.
On this show, Jay, we do something called 5 random questions where myself and my co-host will come up with five random questions, not any particular order about any particular topic. It's just some random things that we'd love to know, and we wanted to do this with you. My first question for you, that's a random question, is, you know, you've been with your father and been around Penn State for so long, being around the football team. What was your favorite stadium that you got to visit, which was not Penn State, but what was the favorite stadium that you got to go see while with your dad?
I would say, from a bowl game standpoint, I don't think there's any better bowl game day setting than the Rose Bowl. That stadium is just, it's you know, it's just in a neat setting. I think the road trips, the away games that we go to, I think Ohio Stadium was one of those places that just, when they renovated, they did an unbelievable job. I mean, our place is the toughest place to play in the Big Ten, probably as tough as there is in the country. And it's loud. Ohio State would be the second toughest place to play in. And I always love going into stadiums like that and playing in tough games. And I'm one of those guys, I love the history of the game, and there's so much there. But those would be the two that really stand out.
All right, so number two, Jay, what is your NFL team?
You know, when I was growing up, I was a Dallas Cowboy fan because of Roger Staubach. I just loved Roger Staubach. And I love Tom Landry. But when they fired Tom Landry and Jerry Jones took over, I gave up on him. And by that time, then when I got into coaching, you had guys that you coached at different teams all over the place. So I really don't have one team that I root for anymore. I just kind of root for the Penn State guys. Like if there's a game between two teams, there's a Penn State guy on one team or a couple on one team and not in the other, I root for the Penn State guys.
My next one, what do you like to do on your downtime? What are your type of hobbies do you have? What do you like to do for fun?
Well, you know, writing was something I always did, and obviously now that I'm writing a book, and I wrote a book and I'm working on a second one that's not about Penn State, not about my dad, by the way, but I'm working on another book. That's become more of a hobby, more than a hobby, because it's, you know, it's something that's taken on a little bit different you know, prominence for me. You know, I like to ski. I started fly fishing 3 years ago, which I had never done before. I've always wanted to, and some people got me hooked on that. And I spend an awful lot of time with my kids, obviously, more so than anything. And that's really something that's been kind of a blessing in all this, is that it's really kind of made me a better father in all this.
All right, for number four, with me reading the book, I think it was the first time that I realized that you were a writer, in the sense of, you know, you considered yourself a writer before doing the book, or a journalist. So, like, how did you get started with that? Did you study that in school? Did you write for another publication or something? So how did you get started with that?
Well, when I was in college, my last semester, I wrote a column for the Daily Collegian, which is a student newspaper in state, at Penn State. When I was in high school, a couple of friends of mine and I, at State College High School, the student newspaper had kind of vanished. And when I was a senior in college, we kind of brought it back. So I've been writing a long time. And in college, I didn't major in it. And then about, you know, every once in a while, I'd get asked to write a guest column. I did one in USA Today. I did some for other newspapers and stuff and did some guest column stuff. And then 5 years ago, statecollege.com asked me, was starting up a site, and they asked me to write a biweekly column. So that kind of got me back in it. But as a hobby, I was always writing short stories and, you know, not really as a journal, but I'd write short stories and put together, you know, I've got the outline of about four or five different books already written and chunks of them written. So, you know, it's something I'd always done. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Awesome.
Okay. And also, you know, we have to ask this question. We're going to throw an extra question in here. Katie's going to finish it off, but I have to ask, what was your favorite sport other than football?
Oh, geez. Probably would be basketball or hockey in terms of when I was in college. But, you know, as I've gotten older, I love baseball. You know, I'm a Red Sox fan. And that started, you know, I always liked baseball, but I wasn't very good at it. But when I was coaching the University of Connecticut at night, when I was during the summer, you turn on the radio and you get the Red Sox games. I really just kind of got intrigued. just totally enchanted with the whole Red Sox thing, went to Fenway, and then I was totally hooked. So that's really probably the one team I follow outside of football more than anything in the sport. I follow more than anything is the Red Sox. And they're having a great offseason, by the way.
Yeah, yes, they are. Two big signings. Yeah. I can't believe it.
Absolutely. And, hey, they got to get some pitching, though.
Well, I got to tell you, though, as a Yankee fan, it's like, all right, well, it looks like it's going to be the Red Sox here, and the Yankees are going to be getting to feel what not playoff looks like for a third straight year. It's going to be tough.
Or it might be the Orioles here.
Don't count the Yankees out. You could never count them out. And you know what? The Yankees, you know, Derek, I have to say, I had great admiration for Derek Jeter. Not this summer, but the summer before, went up to a Yankee game and spent some time with Joe Girardi. And even as a Red Sox fan, he's just a class individual. So it's hard for me to hate the Yankees like I used to now. But I don't hate them, but you know, the Red Sox better finish ahead of them.
Well, what's funny is you have, you know, you're a Red Sox fan, I'm a Yankee fan, and Katie's an Oriole fan. So we pretty much have the AL East represented on this call. So that's good.
I'm not sad Joe Madden's gone from Tampa Bay. That doesn't make me very sad. I'm glad to see him out in the National League because I think he's a hell of a manager.
Yeah, definitely. I think Katie has one more question for you.
All right, my last random bonus question. I'm going to go with favorite band or favorite song.
Oh, favorite band. That would probably be U2, and I really kind of grew up with them going all the way back to 9th, 10th grade when they were, you know, we were still buying records. That's how old I am. But U2 is probably the one, the Rolling Stones would be in there, but I like all kinds. I mean, you know, I would listen to Run DMC in high school. I listen to rap now. I listen to country. I mean, if you go on my iPod, or on my phone, I shouldn't say iPod, nobody has them anymore. But if you go onto my iTunes on my phone, there is just about everything you can imagine on it. But if I had to pick one band and said, I want to go see a show, I'd probably be U2.
Because they're awesome. That's why.
Even a guy like Lyle Lovett, I think, is phenomenal. You know, I mean, so I have a great range.
Jay, this was awesome because you know, it was 45 minutes sort of flew by with us. You know, and I bet you this is only scratching the surface of all the different things. So that, I think if we had you on for longer just to talk sports, not even just to promote the book, it would probably be, you know, even more fun. So we would definitely like to invite you back. But, you know, through the holiday season, we want to wish you the best with you and your family and the best of luck with promoting the book the rest of the way and continued success for the book.
Well, thanks. And thank you guys for having me on, and best of luck with this, too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate the time.
All right. Take care.
Take care. That was fun.
Yeah, that was not surprisingly fun, but you know, more fun than expected. He's a very, very cool guy.
Yeah, and you know what I really enjoyed the fact is how candid he was about the situation. You know, he could have just said, "If you really want to know, read the book," or he could have shied away from some of the questions that we threw at him. To his credit, he answered everything, and he was a lot of fun. A lot of fun to talk to, and kudos to you for some of the great research you did. It was an excellent interview. It was an excellent interview. One of the better ones that we've done on Real Sports Talk Radio. And as Ryan can tell you, we've certainly done a lot of interviews on here. This was very, very good. I really encourage everyone to go check out The Paterno Legacy, Enduring Lessons from the Life and Death of My Father, written by Jay Paterno. It's available in bookstores now. Check it out. You are listening to Real Sports Talk Radio. Randy Zelia with special guest host Katie Hutchinson, Ryan Stern behind the glass right now, manning the booth, which was even funnier is when I said during the interview, reminding everybody who they were listening to, I said your name and you made the exact same sound while Jay was on the phone, which made me laugh even more. So so while we have you on the phone, Katie, while we're here, we have a few minutes left, and then we're going to close up shop because it is holiday time. It is Thanksgiving time, one of my favorite holidays of the year. So, and one of the reasons why I love this holiday so much, and I can be honest about this, is because you get to eat and there's like, you know, you have the excuse to eat and gorge yourself and it's okay. So that's one of the reasons why I love this holiday. So, you know, and it's turkey too. And like usually about like 5 bites of turkey, you get into that food coma. And it's a, and it's a, and it's a good, like, sit on the couch, unbutton
it's
your pants.
It's the best feeling.
Yeah, it's, you know, not that I'm insinuating that you're going to sit on the couch and unbutton your pants, but you know what I'm saying. Like, you know, you just have that real comfortable.
What do you mean? That's what I'm doing right now.
Okay, and we just had that first part of the interview where it's just too much information. So we, while we're here, I really want to do NFL picks with you. You know, people are going to download the show, might be a little late. Some of the games might be over if they download the show here past Thursday. But let's do it. It's a full schedule this week, and I'm looking at the schedule, and there's some games where we might just name the winner and go on. But got to go to Thanksgiving Day games. I actually love this year's Thanksgiving Day games. All of them are going to be competitive. Not, I don't think there might, many of them are going to be blowouts. The first game, Detroit hosting the Super Bowl, the Thanksgiving Day game, as they do every year. This year, they're hosting the Chicago Bears. Chicago's fighting to get back to 500. Detroit is having an unbelievable season. Katie, where do you see this game going?
On this one, I'm going to go with the Lions.
Okay. Yeah, their record on Thanksgiving has not been too good, but they're actually playing a lot better this year than they have in the past. I'm going to go Detroit, too. I'm not a spread guy. I like just picking the winners. For those who've listened to me in the past, especially when Jose was with me, we never did the spread, and he hated me for it. But it's the truth is, if you really want the reason why I don't do the spread, because I don't understand the spreads. Okay? I'm being honest. I don't want to sit here and tell you that I'm against gambling. No, I don't understand it. So if someone wants to understand spreads to me, we'll go over it. I'll sit down, I'll learn it, and then we'll start doing it. Until then, old habits die hard. I can't do it. Second game, the battle of the NFC East. Philadelphia versus Dallas. Dallas, again, hosting Thanksgiving Day as they do every single year. This year against Philadelphia, and first place is on the line. Katie, your thoughts first before I break this down.
Okay, well, I mean, both of these teams, obviously, their record is, you know, matched. So it's going to be a good game either way. I think, and I'm not one of those, like, you know, Cowboys fans that's totally relocated or anything, but I'm going to go with the Cowboys. I don't know. I'm kind of anti-Eagles. Sorry, guys.
Philadelphia, Mark Sanchez doing a decent job filling in for Nick Foles, who's out for the year this year. Dallas's offensive line is the best offensive line in football, and I can't believe I'm saying that out loud. I'm not buying into that defense. I think if Dallas can control the game and keeping their offense on the field and keeping their defense off the field, Dallas is going to win this game. I hate the fact that Tony Romo is playing so well, but he is, and the last thing I want to see as a Giants fan is see Dez Bryant hold up a Super Bowl ring. But there is a slight possibility that this year the Cowboys, you know, obviously we have to get Tony Romo a playoff win before we make any type of Super Bowl talk. But we need to. But I think this is going to be the year to do it for Tony Romo. I'm
going
to go.
You're going with the Cowboys.
Yeah. It's, you know, I'm cringing while saying that. And for Chef Brian Duffy, who's an Eagles fan, it hurts me to pick against.
Oh, that's right.
you think we were going to go a whole show without mentioning Duffy? Come on.
Oh, now I miss him just so much.
Okay, this last game on Thursday night, Seattle and San Francisco. Seattle doesn't look like team they were last year, and San Francisco's playing very well. I'm not a huge fan of either quarterback. I really like Marshawn Lynch. I think he's the best running back in football. But I think San Francisco has more weapons. I think both defenses are solid. So I'm going to go with the San Francisco 49ers just because it's a home game for them.
Well, we are going to agree again on this one. I swear, I'm not copying you. So, yeah, Seattle Seahawks, I am a fan of them. I'm a fan of the 49ers, too. It's kind of how I feel sometimes about the Redskins. We're close to the 49ers. It's a Harbaugh brothers type of thing. So I do tend to root for them. And obviously we played them on Thanksgiving a couple years ago, and it was a hell of a game. So I am going to go with the 49ers.
And by the way, I want to let you know that usually if people are listening to me to bet on their football games, I would recommend betting the opposite, because I am like the bad luck guy. So, you know, well, that's just pretty much how I roll. I don't know how you roll with this, but so, like, you know, I always joke
I'm usually pretty good.
Yeah, you're usually pretty good? Okay. So, like, this year I've actually been pretty good. I've been pretty good, but me and Mike Greenberg are the same way from Mike and Mike. You know, like, usually it's like picks that, you know, picks sure to go wrong. That's me. So, that's usually how I roll. We're going to run through these games. Washington and Indianapolis. I really don't feel like I want to really put a lot of time and effort into this. It's Andrew Luck, and the Colts are just a better team. If Washington wins, I guarantee the next day the skies will be pink and thunder will be brown. That's how much I guarantee a Colts victory here.
Unfortunately, obviously, I'm Baltimore, so I'm not a Colts fan. But you know, since long before I was born. But, it's sad, honestly, the Redskins situation right now. I mean, it's just, RG3 is just, it's not working. They need to move on. It's unfortunate because I don't want to root for the Colts. So on this one, I'm just going to go, hell, whoever wins it, good job. I'm not rooting for either.
Well, you know, it's funny you just said that, though. You're down in Baltimore and over by that D.C. area. What is the perception of the Redskins right now? It's good that you're on, because we can get a different take.
Okay, so I'm going to explain it to you from my standpoint. I have always been under, you know, this notion that if for some, you know, some rare season the Ravens weren't actually doing well, I would root for the Redskins if they were actually doing well. Now, that hasn't happened really since the Ravens have been around. It's never been reversed for me, but I always thought that would be the second team I would root for because they're the closest to us, and, you know, we're right here near D.C., but then, unfortunately, sometimes I don't want to root for them because I know a lot of their fans, and they hate us. They hate us because we came along later and we're a better team, and it sucks. But so for that reason, I'm so torn. I root for them secretly, but their fans hate us, and sometimes I don't want them to win, and that's it.
I just want to go on record. You'll never hear that analyst, that type of analyst and that type of analyzation of a game on ESPN. That's why I listen to this show.
It's a female emotional perspective, and that is what ESPN is missing, said no one ever.
Well, unless we have Chris Berman come out wearing a miniskirt, which I don't think is happening anytime soon. Tennessee's at Houston. Again, one of those games where you just don't spend a lot of time on. Tennessee's a bad football team. Houston is in the middle of the pack in a transition year. Houston's just a better football team. I'm going to go with Houston.
I'm going to agree with you on that one as well.
Next game is out in Snowland, or as I like to call it, Buffalo. The Cleveland Browns are at the Buffalo Bills. I like Buffalo. I think they, you know, they're obviously going to be shopping for a quarterback at the end of the year. I'll bring up a little side note to that in a few minutes. Cleveland's playing very, very well, minus the Johnny Manziel distraction. This is a tough game. I'm going to go with a team with a better record. Cleveland can go play on the road. It doesn't matter what type of weather it is. Buffalo is still growing as a team, but I think Cleveland is really coming into their own right now. So I'm going to go with the Browns.
All right, on this one, I'm actually going to go with the Bills. And you know what? I don't know if I'm really voting on who I think is going to win, but who I want to win. Browns, again, I'm Baltimore. I'm not supposed to like them. And the Bills are just one of those really diehard fan bases that despite, you know, years of them not being good, they're just so diehard. And I know a bunch of them. And you know, it's nice. So I'm hoping the Bills win.
The next game, I don't even have to guess where you're going. This is San Diego at Baltimore. I've said this about the Ravens, and I'm taking the fact that, you know, you're down in Baltimore, and I'm also taking the fact that Phillip Rivers is one of my fantasy football quarterbacks. But I'm going to say this, and this is the honest truth. I've been saying this, and Ryan can vouch for me. Other people can vouch for me. The one team that everyone seems to be forgetting about and how well they're playing is the Baltimore Ravens. They have a very, very complete team. The Ray Rice situation is behind them. They're playing excellent football. Flacco is quietly having a great year, a very consistent year. San Diego is still up and down. You don't know which Charger team is going to show up. Is the team that's sitting there going toe-to-toe with the Raiders, or is the team that's going to show up that blew out the Kansas City Chiefs? So you don't know which team is showing up. I tend to go towards the side of consistency, and that's been Baltimore. So I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens on this game.
And that's not at all because of, you know, our relationship as co-hosts. You're really saying that?
No, I really mean that from the bottom of my heart. I really do think Baltimore will win that game.
Okay, so drum roll, please, on who I'm going with.
By the way, I have to say, I'm not going to also bring up the fact that you threatened me before the show if I didn't pick Baltimore. We're not going to bring that part of it up. So, seriously, I choose Baltimore, so it's okay.
All right. Well, I also choose Baltimore. That's crazy. It is because, number one, of course, every week my team is going to win. I'm not delusional to the fact that my team can show up or not show up. And also sometimes my team doesn't show up until the second half. Regardless, I'm Baltimore Ravens all the way, and especially because it's at home. Because we are one of those teams that rarely, rarely loses at home because our fans are awesome. So I'm going with the Ravens. Sorry, Chargers.
I like how you give the apology afterwards, too. The next game is a game I'll be paying attention to. Obviously, the New York Giants at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Listen, the Jacksonville Jaguars are a young team. They have a lot of young players, but they also have a lot of guys that would never make any other NFL team. They're still growing. They're still getting better. I like how I'm trying to justify them.
You're such a nice guy. It's okay. That's your role to play.
It's okay. So I do think Jacksonville's a team that's going to sooner or later start winning. The Giants need this win. They need to get off the schneid here. They have not won since they beat Atlanta back in October. So the Giants really need to come together here. You know, I made up an interesting point a little while ago about the Buffalo-Cleveland game. One of the things that I was sitting there talking with someone about during the year is how the Giants should start looking at the idea of possibly rebuilding. And, you know, that means losing Tom Coughlin as a coach and Eli Manning as a quarterback. And they said, well, where would Eli go? And I said, there's about two or three teams out there that have a decent team that can use a veteran quarterback. And I think the Buffalo Bills is one of those teams that if Eli Manning went to Buffalo right now, that team would be very, very, very good. The Giants are at that point where it's the old expression of the ship is sailing in the water, and instead of the whole ship falling apart, you're plugging holes so it doesn't drown instead of just rebuilding the ship. That's what the Giants really need to do now, to stop plugging the holes and rebuild the ship. I'm going to go with the Giants over Jacksonville here, but I had to plant that seed about the idea about the Giants moving on from Eli Manning, because we're getting to that point where he's a 34-year-old quarterback. It's a young man's game. You have to start looking forward to the future. So that's just my take. Giants, Jacksonville, I definitely need to hear you give a good breakdown, just like you gave the Ravens-San Diego game.
Okay. Well, as you know, and this isn't because we're friends, Giants are my second team. That is obviously because I was up there for 5 years, and I was a New York State resident when they won the Super Bowl. So I had a great time. But, I mean, looking at these two teams next to each other, I'm sorry to say to all my friends in New York, I mean, it's a losing record versus a losing record, a terribly losing record. But I do think, yeah, out of these two teams, the Giants, definitely Giants all the way. And obviously I sympathize with Jacksonville Jaguars as having, like, you know, a young team. Everybody kind of goes through that. The Ravens really didn't, but a lot of teams do. Yeah, I'm going Giants. Sorry, Jaguars.
Again, I like how you apologize to the other team's fan base every single time.
Because I'm sure I have friends who root for them, and I don't want to hear that stuff on Facebook.
Okay, Cincinnati and Tampa Bay. I'm just Cincinnati. Tampa's a mess. I can't sugarcoat that. Tampa's a mess. I really can't watch them. You know, it's Greg Schiano's team, which with Lovie Smith coaching it. They have to rebuild. This is Cincinnati. Cincinnati. This is, if they don't blow this game open, I'll be very disappointed.
Yep, couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the Bengals have just been, you know, a very strong franchise, so, and they are, you know, this year, just as usual. So, yeah, I don't think it's much of a match. Pretty sure the Bengals are going to take care of that one.
Okay, really random thought here. Have you ever seen a Bengals home game and you look around the stadium and you see, like, the leopard skin or the, you know, the Bengals, like, skin thing that they have around the side of the you know, the side walls? It's really creepy. I know they're trying to make you feel like you're in a jungle, but it is one of the creepiest things I think I've ever seen.
No, I have not seen that. And by the way, it's definitely not leopard spots. So Bengal has stripes.
I realized it after I said it, so thank you for correcting me. I appreciate that.
But no, now I'm going to have to pay attention to the game on Sunday.
Buccaneers. Yeah, it's at Tampa. But the next home game that Cincinnati has that they are on television by you, definitely watch that. It's something definitely – you'll look at it and you'll know how creepy it is. The next game is probably going to be the least watched game on the NFL ticket this week. It is Oakland versus St. Louis. Oakland's still terrible, even though they won their first game last week. St. Louis would be one of those teams where if Eli Manning were to leave the Giants, that he should probably go to. I'm going St. Louis in a runaway game.
Absolutely. St. Louis all the way. Yeah, I mean, Raiders just aren't having a great season. We all know they just won. Hooray. But, yeah, St. Louis Rams. I've been rooting for them lately, so I think this will just, you know, up their bring them back from this past week's loss. It was a rough one.
Next game is probably one of the more, I think, probably the game of the week. A lot of people won't think so, but I do think it is. New Orleans versus Pittsburgh Blues. It's going to be a really those are two good teams. I know New Orleans is struggling this year, but I really like the way the Steelers have been playing this year. So, plus again, we're going to leave off the fact that Antonio Brown's my fantasy wide receiver. So we're pushing that off to the side. I'm going to go because the Steelers are home and New Orleans seems to struggle a little bit on the road. I'm going to go with the Steelers in a close game.
I wish I could just plead the fifth on this one because we all know I don't want to say the Steelers, but I think the Steelers. I mean, obviously we just, you know, I just played the Saints, and they didn't look terrible. It wasn't a blowout. They really wanted it. God, this is hard for me. You know, unfortunately, no, I'm going to go with the Saints. This is based on who I'm rooting for. I have to root for the Saints.
It was going to hurt you that much to do it, huh?
You know what? No, you know, sometimes I just have to I have to cheer on somebody, whether I think they will be the winner or not. I'm just going to, that's what I do. I'm going to cheer on the Saints.
All right, can
Shocking.
We both agree that, I think it's funny that you're like talking yourself out of going for Pittsburgh. Can we both agree that Carolina is going to beat Minnesota?
Yes, I do think, I would go with that.
Okay. And same thing with Arizona is going to beat Atlanta.
Arizona and Atlanta. What do I think? I would definitely go with Cardinals on that one. They're looking really good this year.
Okay. Good. I'm glad. So I don't have to spend any time or energy talking about those four teams because all four of them. Oh, Arizona is the best team in the NFC. But I'll tell you, the other three teams, I can't think of anything positive to say about them. So I think it's easier to ignore it and walk away. The next two games could be games of the week as well. New England and Green Bay. Everybody hates me because of how I talk about Aaron Rodgers, how I think Aaron Rodgers is a little overrated. Colin Cowherd from The Herd on ESPN Radio has summed up Aaron Rodgers the best. Aaron Rodgers, if you say bad things about him as a media member, he will not talk to you. So everyone goes and kisses his butt. Do I think he's an elite quarterback? I agree totally. But I do not think he is the greatest thing since sliced bread. He's a great quarterback. So is Tom Brady. Both guys. This is going to be a shootout. I think because it's in Green Bay, my heart and my gut is telling me to go Green Bay. But I think if there's any team that can beat them on the, you know, as a visiting team, it's New England, and they're clicking on all cylinders. And I don't trust the Green Bay Packers defense. they've given me reason not to, so I'm going to go against my gut feeling and go with the New England Patriots on this one.
All right. Well, speaking of Aaron Rodgers, I mean, he hasn't although the team record is good, I don't think he's been having his best season, especially at, you know, at the beginning. And like you said, the defense, they're kind of hard to trust at this point. But I think I am going to go with Green Bay. You know, they're another team that has a huge fan base, and it's at Green Bay. So I'm going to go with Green Bay.
Okay. Two games left. Denver at Kansas City. I think Peyton Manning is going to get it together. You know, they had a great win against Miami last week. I'm waiting for Denver to just to sort of blow the doors off of a team, and I think Kansas City might be that team. I'm going to go with the Broncos. I just in Peyton, I trust.
I'm going with Broncos too. They have Peyton Manning, and they've been doing really well. They have close records right now with the Chiefs, but I'm going to go Broncos too.
And in a game where I think that if you decided to get a lot of these staff members of Bar Rescue and some of your close friends and family, it would probably do a better job against the Miami Dolphins. But the Miami Dolphins are at the New York Jets on Monday Night Football. Obviously, I'm picking the Miami Dolphins. The Jets are a disaster. You have a better opportunity of watching a child run around in a hamster wheel then you would have a better chance of the Jets winning a football game. You might think I'm being a little harsh, but obviously you did not notice during the Jet game on Monday night that they had at least did not operate heavy machinery while watching the Jets on offense pop up on the screen. That's how dull and that's how the deplorable it is. The Jets have turned back the game of football, I think, about 35 years. I know I'm being harsh. If Jets fans are listening to them, I'm sorry. But you know what? You're losing your coach at the end of the year. You might lose your GM at the end of the year. You don't have a quarterback. I'm leaving the Michael Vick jokes out of it for now. Obviously, I'm going with the Miami Dolphins.
Yes, I feel the same way. I mean, it's kind of hard not to with the Jets being 2-9. Definitely Miami Dolphins, besides the fact that Jets just need to get rid of Rex Ryan so badly. I'm tired of looking at him. So I'm going Miami Dolphins, which, again, kind of, you know, I don't normally say that, but they're not looking bad this year, so, and they're looking better than the Jets. So I'm going Dolphins.
I think that you couldn't have cleaned that up any better than from what I just spewed out about the Jets. But we're down to the final 3 minutes here, so let's pay some bills. First off, I want to thank Katie for coming back on tonight and doing this show with me. Real Sports Talk Radio has been on and off, on and off, on and off. We want to wish everybody who's listening a wonderful Thanksgiving and a great holiday season. Keep looking at backsportspage.com and Real Sports Talk Radio on Facebook and on Back Sports Page on Facebook for when we'll be back for our next episode. Check us out, backsportspage.com, Facebook/Real Sports Talk Radio, Facebook/Back Sports Page, Twitter @Back Sports Page. You can find me on Twitter @RandyBSP. Katie, you're on Twitter as well. Let them know.
Of course I'm on the Twitter machine, and you can reach me @KT_Hutch.
Okay, and of course I have to end this with saying the opportunity to go on your iPad, your Android tablet, or anything, and download this Spike TV app. You can watch the episode Murphy's Mess and see Katie on Bar Rescue.
My 5 minutes of fame, kind of.
Yes, you can see your 5 minutes of fame. Look at it. You were awesome on that episode. I'm only joking with you about the shame part. You know what we need to do? Last minute of the show, we need to make a wager of some sorts. Unless you think we want to come on for next week, and we'll do it for an NFL game for next week. We have to do some sort of wager.
For what?
I don't know. That was on the spark mark moment there. It failed miserably. We'll try for the next show. Okay. Guys, thanks very much for listening tonight. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Jay Paterno. It was awesome for us. For Katie Hutchinson, I'm Randy Zelia. Ryan Stern behind the glass. Thanks for listening to Real Sports Talk Radio. We'll see you next week.
Have a good night.